I'm Victor Mandolia. I'm with my co-host, Deborah Gilbert.
Good morning.
And we have a really interesting show today. The one thing that I'm going to just say right up front is that we recorded this not in the studio, and so the recording is a little bit off, and I'm going to try to adjust some of that here in the studio, but my apologies for the levels of the recording. But I think it's worth a listen. We're going to be hearing from District Attorney, Columbia County District Attorney Paul Chyka, and Chief of Police Ed Moore from the City of Hudson, and Bob Gibson, who is an Assistant District Attorney here with the DA's office. He deals especially with drug court and substance abuse issues in the District Attorney's office. So do you have any quick thoughts about the recording before we get into it?
Well, we were lucky to get all of these people together. It was a full studio, so this is a great opportunity.
And this is the second in a series of shows that we're doing on addiction and recovery here in our area. And we really wanted to do this episode is really focused on law enforcement and law enforcement's reaction to the opiate epidemic in particular. So we're very happy and proud to have had all three of our guests on. So we'll get right to the recording, and then Deborah and I will be back at the end of the show live in the studio to comment a little bit on the interview. And just for your reference, this was recorded 1 week ago today. Victor Mandolia, you're on At Issue. This is WGXC 90.7 FM. We are doing, this is the second in a series of episodes that we're talking about addiction and treatment and criminal justice in our area. Today we're joined by Columbia County District Attorney Paul Chyka, Hudson Chief of Police Ed Moore, and Bob Gibson, who is an Assistant District Attorney in the office. My co-host today is Deborah Gilbert, as usual. And so thanks for joining us, and thank you to all of our guests.
It's great to have you here.
So we're hearing a lot in the press about opiate addiction in particular. And we were wondering, to start off, like, are you seeing that? Do you think that that's really, is the press overreacting, or is it real?
Thank you for having us, Victor. It is very real. Very real, very scary.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started as a prosecutor, as an assistant DA in Columbia County back in 1981, I was shocked to learn that people in Hudson were putting needles in their arms.
Right.
Being a farm boy growing up in Livingston, coming into Hudson to buy shoes or shirts, you could do that back then.
Mm-hmm.
And then to come and work with the Hudson Police Department, and then Sheriff Proper, and find out that there was heroin in Hudson and Columbia County was extremely shocking to me. And back then, as you may know, we had the Rockefeller drug laws, which were extremely, extremely harsh. The theory being that the harsher a sentence, the greater the deterrent was for these drug-related crimes. Well, the fact of the matter is, as we've learned over time, it doesn't work that way.
Right.
And although the heroin issues went down for a while towards the late 80s to be replaced by cocaine and crack cocaine in large part, over the last several years, with the prevalence of synthetic narcotics and the substitution by persons who would otherwise be addicted to synthetic narcotics with cheap heroin,
right,
cheap and very, very powerful heroin, it has exploded to levels we have never known before.
Right.
And so a long answer to your short question, it is a very, very major problem.
And a lot of people think that it is due to the crackdown on doctors overprescribing OxyContin and other opioid or synthetic opioids. Is that something that you feel is a part of the mix here?
Most definitely.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, when synthetic narcotics were first came into substantial use several years ago, there was a theory, and in fact it was popularized by several medical journals, that when prescribed correctly, be synthetic narcotics like Oxycontin and Oxycodone and so on, are not particularly addictive. Well, we've learned otherwise.
Right.
And in fact, the New York State Legislature has done quite a lot in the last year to try to combat that. In fact, they've created legislation called iStop, which Bob is very familiar with, to combat that. And we're hopeful that that will combat that in the future. But right now we have so many persons who, of all ages, addicted to these synthetic narcotics who are substituting heroin for its use, that it's an epidemic. It's an epidemic.
Right. Many people see addiction as a public health problem. So what I'm wondering is, from your perspective, and we wanted to have you here as we're dealing with each piece of the addiction issue separately, and we wanted to have you here to talk about law enforcement. But do you think that we are doing enough to treat the illness of addiction before people get arrested and are defendants, basically?
Well, clearly not.
Right.
I mean, the numbers and the results clearly indicate otherwise.
Right.
And as I think Bob can speak to, there's some issues, serious issues, with respect to insurance.
Right.
For people who want treatment.
Uh-huh. So, Bob, maybe you could touch on that.
I'd be happy to. Thanks. One of the issues that can arise, and I'll speak in terms of folks who may have just initially had contact with the criminal justice system, mm-hmm. but you're pre-trial, so you're on a pre-trial release mode, and you clearly there's substance abuse and maybe heroin involved. The judge will want an evaluation done. Twin Counties right here in Hudson does
right.
an excellent job with that.
That's good.
And there may be an evaluation forthcoming. And from what I've learned in speaking with the executive director over there is that oftentimes, particularly when it's heroin, detoxification is in order.
Right.
And they want that. Insurance companies don't see heroin addiction as a life-threatening problem, and therefore do not approve detoxification.
Unbelievable.
And so the only alternative for these treatment centers is to do outpatient treatment.
Right.
Of course, with the risks being these folks by day are getting treatment but are released right back out while it's still in their body, mm-hmm. while withdrawal is still going on.
Right.
And then to tack on to that, there's been an issue with Suboxone in the community, having enough centers available to make that available
right.
to folks and having enough room in the programs. So there's a lot of issues that the folks at Twin Counties now are dealing with, and I know the DA is happy to work with them.
And for our listeners who don't know what Suboxone is, maybe you could just explain that briefly.
Well, I'm certainly no expert on the drug itself. I know what it's used for.
Mm-hmm.
It's predominantly used to treat the symptoms that come with withdrawal
right.
With heroin.
Right.
So it's a legal drug prescription drug.
That's correct. You are overseen by a physician,
right.
And it's prescribed, and it's part of a treatment regimen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not ideally not simply to take care of the symptoms itself. It's part and parcel of a treatment regimen.
Right. Well, you sort of brought up my next question. Do you think that the unavailability of inpatient drug treatment in the county or in the area even is a problem? Is that because there's no inpatient facility here? I think a lot of people go down to Westchester or in Connecticut in order to get inpatient. Is that a problem as far as treatment goes?
It's a major problem.
Right.
As you correctly note, people have to travel great distances.
Right.
Or their families have to arrange for them to travel great
right.
distances. To Sullivan, I think there's a place in Ulster, Westchester, Saratoga County,
mm-hmm.
Utica. It's not having something close by is a very, very major problem. It makes it particularly onerous,
mm-hmm.
An onerous burden on the folks that are either mandated for treatment or who seek treatment on their own.
Right.
never mind the issues as relates to insurance.
Right.
And on their families.
Absolutely, on their families. The families suffer from having grown up and lived with the folks who are addicted and all the related problems, because there are so many, including criminal conduct and child neglect and such related problems. But then they also have to deal with the recovery and the treatment, which is extremely burdensome.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, here in Columbia County, we have some people who are forward-thinking. As I say, back in the old days, it was universal, almost universal, in the criminal justice system that we treat these issues with very lengthy prison terms.
Right.
It simply didn't work. And although lengthy prison terms are oftentimes necessary, particularly for persons who are selling and profiting from drugs, but the fact is it does not cure addiction. And there are lots of programs in with the Department of Corrections for the treatment of addiction. By then, it's oftentimes too late. But as I say, here in Columbia County, we're very, very lucky. We have very forward-thinking judges in Judge Nichols and Judge Kowick, both of whom are very active in the treatment with respect to drug court. And in fact, we have a judge in the town of Livingston who was doing what was effectively a drug court 30 years ago,
mm-hmm.
Requiring defendants who came before him for minor offenses or major offenses to return on occasion after occasion after occasion, and working closely with Beth Schuster of Twin Counties to try to treat these folks and rehabilitate these folks before
right.
incarceration,
mm-hmm.
or sometimes in conjunction with incarceration.
Right.
So we are lucky that there are people in Columbia County in the system who recognize that jail and prison is not the only answer.
Right. And for many people, it only exacerbates the problem, I guess.
That's exactly
right?
True.
Chief, I know that there's been a lot of talk about the, naloxone, the antidote for heroin ODs. Are all of your people carrying them and carrying it? And do you know about it in the county?
Well,
is it also
I've been doing a lot of reading on this. There's a lot of movement in New York and Vermont, Connecticut. There's a lot of legislation out there, 11 bills right now, to get Narcan out in the hands of the police.
Mm-hmm.
Just to throw some figures at you to tell about this the effects of the heroin in the community. In 2008, in New York State, about 218 overdose deaths. In 2012, 478.
Mm-hmm.
So the statistics are all the evidence you need that this is a problem.
Right.
So how do we address it? So one of the solutions, Narcan, naloxone has been around since the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But now we know that this prescription medicine in the hands of the police, given readily, can help save lives.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's less of an issue in the city of Hudson because of the quick response time of
right.
our local ambulance squad.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a county deputy or state trooper on a highway somewhere and encounter this, I think that the use that they're carrying by the police will be quite effective. But there's so many issues associated with it, Vic. It's a third-party prescription.
Mm-hmm.
The storage of this prescription medicine in my station is an issue.
Does it need to be refrigerated or something? Or
well, just the fact that you should be accountable for prescription
oh, I
see,
yeah.
medicine that
sure.
in your possession. Things like, lawsuits, and what if we administer it and the person dies? Are we, is the city subject to lawsuits? And these
right.
are the kind of things that have to be ironed out. But I think it's a wave that's coming,
mm-hmm.
and that you'll see a lot more talk about this.
Right.
And I do think that soon all officers in the county will be equipped.
Do you think it should be more widely available? Do you think perhaps it should not be by prescription, and that maybe people who are using should be
I don't
able
know
to
enough about
that?
The effects or alleged side effects or
mm-hmm.
possible allergic reactions and things like this.
Right.
I really don't know enough about that. I'll have to educate myself, but there will be training. I do believe that this thing is coming.
Right.
And it will
so
be used. We've used it in town already, by the way.
Really?
I remember last year in the St. Charles parking lot, Greenport Rescue was there. Mm-hmm. It's been used in the emergency room a lot. So this is nothing new.
Right.
But giving it to the police officers is obviously new.
So your agency and Greenport Rescue are seeing ODs on a regular basis.
Bob has some numbers to discuss with you, all right. Mr. M.
Yeah. Please,
well,
sir.
That's correct. It came to my attention relatively recently that this past December in Livingston alone, just the town of Livingston, where Judge Moore sits,
right.
Five people were resuscitated and brought back, luckily and fortunately, after a heroin overdose. And I know since the district attorney came in and we've been tracking these things, there's been some deaths widely believed to be related to heroin.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's certainly a concern of ours.
In Columbia County.
In Columbia County.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it seems that it's everywhere around us. I mean, it's people never really expected that heroin would be a big problem in rural areas, but it seems to be just as much of a problematic here as anywhere.
Yeah.
Is this addiction to painkillers and heroin affecting any specific groups in our county? Is it affecting people in certain socioeconomic brackets?
Well, that's perhaps why the governor of Vermont dedicated his entire state of the state message last year to heroin and synthetic narcotic abuse. It knows no socioeconomic lines or boundaries. It is used and abused across the board. It's not only in Hudson High School, it's in Ichabod, it's in Germantown, it's in New Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
It's
cheaper than pot
absolutely.
At this point.
Absolutely.
Right.
You can buy a dose of heroin for cheaper than a pack of cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
But on the same token, and the chief will speak to this even more so, the persons who are not getting enough synthetic narcotics can go out and sell the individual pills for $30 or $40
right.
a pill,
right?
And instead of using that for their to satisfy their addiction, they use that money and buy several doses of heroin. And finishing my answer in response to your question, Ms. Gilbert, it not only does it know no boundaries with respect to geography. We're talking about professionals. We're talking about laborers. It's everywhere.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, we are with District Attorney Paul Chaika, Hudson Chief of Police Ed Moore, and Bob Gibson, who is an Assistant District Attorney in the District Attorney's Office, dealing with particularly with substances, I guess. You, Mr. District Attorney, you alluded to the Rockefeller drug law, so I was wondering what you guys who are in law enforcement, do you believe that the drug war is working? If it isn't, what do we replace it with?
Well, our very presence here today with you indicates it's not working.
Right.
I don't know.
I was going to have to pull it out of you. And of course, I think it's so obvious at this point that it's universally understood that it just doesn't work.
It's clearly not working.
Mm-hmm.
How about the DARE programs? Is that what you're referring to?
Well, the DARE program, when I was DA last time, was in very much in favor, and I'm told, and perhaps the chief can speak to this because I think he's discussing putting an officer back in Hudson School, it's not quite as much in favor as it had been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to keep exploring programs such as those to make an attempt to put a dent in this, because as you say correctly, as you both agree, it's the war, we're losing the war,
right?
And everything we seem to do there, we're putting band-aids on these major bleeds.
Mm-hmm.
There have to be answers there.
Do you think that having more harm reduction education where it's we realize that people are using, and we try to make people understand how to use more safely, and how to, and obviously at the same time try to get them into treatment, and for those who are prepared and ready, or you know, sometimes people have to hit rock bottom. That's when they see you guys. But
well, I don't believe there's any safe usage.
Uh-huh. safer? I mean,
when you talk about heroin, are people smoking it now? Are they ingesting it?
You can snort it, you can inject it, and you can smoke it.
Mm-hmm. So, whatever.
And you can become addicted immediately. You can suffer withdrawal symptoms mm-hmm. right after your first dose. This is what's so bad about it. We see first-time users getting in trouble and getting in health issues and stuff, mm-hmm. and then becoming immediately addicted. That's how powerful it is, and that's wow. the problem.
So this question is for any of you. Is there something that the nonprofit sector or the government is currently not doing that would help the situation if it were implemented? And conversely, are we doing something that would be better if we weren't doing that?
Well, I think Bob brought up something that's extremely important, mm-hmm. and that is the fact that we have to get, be it the government or the insurance companies, in a position where they can help people who want help.
Right.
If, as Bob says, persons who are on Medicaid can't get treated for withdrawals, they're not going to go. They're not going to stop using.
And
they're going to continue to.
And people are only ready, like in this little window of time. And if they are not able to access the care that they need, they're just back in the streets and using again.
That's exactly right. And the fact, and the sad fact is as well, that there's so many people out there that have gone through many, many, many programs before finally succeeding
right.
in one. It's not unusual for persons, for many dozens to fail
right.
to have failed out dozens of times
right.
before eventually succeeding. Or dying.
Right. I was just listening to a story about this on NPR, and they mentioned that only 10% of the people who enter drug treatment actually succeed on the first time, and then many, you know, have a slip and go back out and come back a month later, a year later, 10 years later, or never come back. So that's, you know, the guy who was speaking was like, you know, if this was the success rate in almost any other thing, it would be seen as a failure. But
how many deaths?
It's a complicated thing.
I think Bob indicates in the last 2.5 years we've had about, I believe there have been 5 deaths in Columbia County related to heroin overdoses.
And now,
right,
you,
Bob?
That's correct. That includes an 18-year-old girl.
So wow. Is it mostly young people, these deaths?
They were not all young, although more much on the younger side. There was an 18-year-old girl, there's a 21-year-old I'll call him young man, but I think he's a kid as well. They died within days of each other last year. So
that was up in the Stockport area.
It was. So,
and do you think that it was a bad batch of drugs, or is it, or it just was a coincidence that it happened together?
Well, I don't want to speculate.
Right.
That was certainly, it was certainly part of the speculation at the time, and I don't want to do that, but
right.
I know it's endemic of the problem.
If there was a bad batch of drugs going around, is that something that the government would warn people about? I mean, is there a system in place to notify the public?
Yeah, we see down in Dutchess County, where to the south of us, we see more instances of overdoses.
Uh-huh.
They'll identify a batch of heroin based on the labeling on
right.
the envelopes, and then the police will actually get the information out in a press release
right.
that, hey, this is a dangerous batch that's out there. You uh-huh. have a lot of these additives. This isn't mixed in a laboratory.
Right.
So a lot of these additives, everything from rat poison to phenylin, these things don't metabolize in the body and can
right.
lead to strokes and death, seizures,
uh-huh.
paralysis. So if we do, and we've seen this to the south, we haven't seen it up here yet,
right.
but we could. So if we identify on the streets a particular packaging or any information that we think could be a public health risk, we will definitely get the information out
mm-hmm.
there.
Great. Is Hudson the center of it, or is it everywhere? Is the drug trade here, or?
Hudson has the train station.
Right.
And in fact, Hudson, the population, as you know, of Hudson is approximately 10% of the population of the
right.
of the whole county. However, it's been my experience that more than 50% of the crime either occurs in the county, either occurs in Hudson or originates in Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
So long answer to your question, Hudson is a focal point for a lot, including including the drug trade. But that doesn't mean, however, that it's not out in Valencia and New Lebanon, and because it is.
Right.
It is. It's in Kinderhook. It's in Ankrum. It's everywhere. It just so happens that because of geography and other reasons, it's easier. Hudson has a higher concentration than certain of other rural areas.
Right.
More infrastructure, so to speak.
Infrastructure. Yeah. And I'll tell you something that I always find that is particularly annoying to me. Nobody's growing poppies in Columbia County.
Right.
Nobody's
except the
New
ones
York
that
State.
Don't make heroin.
Yeah,
right?
Well, it's not happening in Columbia
right.
County. It's not happening in New York State. It's not happening anywhere in the United States of America. However, the local taxpayers in Hudson and Columbia County are paying me and Bob and Chief Moore to fight and a large part of our job every day, 24 hours a day, is battling these issues that come from Afghanistan and Mexico
right.
and South America
right.
because the federal government can't keep it out. But we have to pay for it.
Right.
You and you, Ms. Gilbert, have to pay for it with your local tax dollars. And I think...
And we go and take over a country like Afghanistan, and it's the biggest cash crop in the country.
And in fact,
still.
From what I understand, the production has gone up since we've been there.
As it did in Vietnam,
right.
the Golden Triangle.
Yeah. So we know that the prisons are overwhelmingly populated with people of color. Are you finding that arrests are significantly higher of people of color, or are the cases spread out all over the place?
For the drug use, it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, it knows no boundaries with respect to socioeconomic, geography, or race.
Right. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about drug court, because some people know about it. I have a limited knowledge of it, but I think it's obviously alternatives to incarceration are better than the costs involved with putting somebody away, and then often their lives are thrown away after that happens. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about drug court and how it works and how you access it and all those things.
Drug court is here in Columbia County, both the regional drug court and the felony level drug court are both handled by Judge Nichols. He meets weekly with his drug court team, which includes prosecutor, defense attorneys, as well as the drug court coordinator, a person employed by the drug court by the Office of Court Administration, whose sole job is to deal with drug court and persons being treated in drug court. It includes Ms. Schuster, the director of Twin County. When you have her here, by the way, Victor, have her explain to you why it's not Twin Counties.
Okay.
But anyway, it includes the Department of Social Services, because Judge Nichols is also the drug court judge for family court.
Right.
Because it's a very major problem, as obviously with respect to families and neglected children. And others, and all these folks get together and develop treatment plans, buying together. Obviously, the ultimate decisions are made by the judge, but they get for the persons who have been sentenced to drug court, and oftentimes it requires an initial observation period and a detoxification period, after which there are several options that the judge has before him, including requiring persons to be either treated inpatient or outpatient, and the follow-through that occurs every week thereafter. The drug court coordinator, as well as the other treatment providers, together with the attorneys involved, follow each of these cases extremely closely to make sure that there are no problems with respect to keeping off drugs and alcohol, as the time goes on, the judge has within his power the ability to sanction persons or punish them when they fall off the wagon, for example, and those punishments can be anything from something minor without involving incarceration, ultimately to being thrown out of drug court,
right,
and sentenced
and
to
facing
a
your
prison
full sentence,
term.
Right.
Yes, yes, and you know it. The success over drug courts throughout the state varies. We are very fortunate because we have such dedicated persons involved to have a very, very high success rate. Although, I would be exaggerating if I were to tell you that it's anywhere close to 100%.
Right.
It's just simply still because of the nature of addiction and heroin and addiction to all other drugs. It's very, very difficult to succeed, but with work, hard work and dedication, a lot of people have been saved in drug court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and a lot of families.
And the district attorney is the gatekeeper of drug court.
Yes and no. Under certain circumstances, the district attorney can veto a sentence of a drug court, but with new legislation. Within the last year or two, there are certain diversionary programs where a judge, at the request of the defense attorney, can overrule the district attorney and put someone in drug court regardless.
And that's new?
Yes. Huh. Yes. Here in Columbia County, we, as often, in the vast majority of cases, defer to the experts on the drug court treatment.
Team, right.
Including those such persons as Ms. Schuster and Judge Nichols, of course,
right.
who recognize persons who much more easily and readily than we in law enforcement are able to do so. That can be that are good candidates for the program and who may succeed. And we extremely more often than not defer to their expertise.
Uh-huh. Roughly, how many people are going through drug court at this point?
At any one time, Bob? Mm-hmm.
I would say participants at this particular time are probably around 25. That's a rough estimate.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, I went to drug court once. I wrote a story about it, and Judge Nichols was very proud of it, and I think rightfully so. It seems like a hopeful part of this picture.
I must tell you, when I was, I'm a recovering judge myself, and before Judge Nichols was elected, I was trained to become a drug court judge myself out in Buffalo. When he was elected, he came to me and we discussed it, and in fact, I deferred to him. After a month or two, I was no longer a drug court judge and deferred all of those programs and drug court itself to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he is doing extremely well, much better than I would have ever
mm-hmm.
done.
Did you see something in Judge Nichols that you felt you were lacking, like an enthusiasm for that kind of thing? Or
Judge Nichols does have a personality and character that is much more suited for drug treatment court.
That's diplomatic.
More patience, perhaps?
Perhaps.
Chief, are there specific things that your force is looking to do to sort of correct the problem or to deal with the issue? Differently than it has been.
Well, we use terms like an epidemic. So we put a medical model on this issue, but often forgotten is the education component.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been to the Hudson City School District. I've made an indication that sometime this summer, when I come up to full staffing, I'd like to dedicate a SRO to the school district, and part of the training will involve.
And that's a school resource officer,
right? And part of it will be an education program for drugs to identify, what the dangers are for the young people. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem. That's where our efforts are concentrated in the city of Hudson, because I have the luxury of only worrying about the city of Hudson. I want to really focus on the people, the dealers, that would make addicts of our young people.
Mm-hmm.
And this I believe with my whole heart that we can make an effect on. The problem is, I'm afraid we will probably displace a lot of the problem out of the city.
Mm-hmm.
But my efforts are going to be to make it less appealing for these folks to come up, buy heroin at $5 or $6 a dose and sell it up here for $10 or $12 to expect to make a profit.
Mm-hmm.
I want to concentrate on identifying these dealers in town here and arrest them, prosecute them, and make it less desirable to come to the city of Hudson. And that's going to be my focus. That doesn't solve the problem, obviously, in a macro look at this thing.
Right.
But it will help really what my job is, to get the job done, and that's what I intend to do.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in December, the Hudson Police Chief Moore and his folks work and his officers working with the New York State Police Community Narcotics Enforcement Team engaged in a long-term investigation with respect to the sale of narcotics, particularly heroin here in Hudson. We indicted 20 persons in December. As of this morning, I think all but two or three so far have been convicted, and all are going to prison. All of these people we were dealing with are people who were making money from the sale of drugs. Many, if not all of them themselves, are addicted, but we made a determination that given the fact that they are profiting from other persons' misery, that we were pretty successful in getting them all convicted, and as I say, except thus far, two or three who may be going to trial, and making sure that not only are they deterred from continuing to sell, others, we're hopeful, will see that and at least think twice about selling, at least in Columbia County. Perhaps they'll go to Green or Berkshire or Rensselaer or Dutchess. But
you going
to
give them a bus ticket?
Was this the crackdown that was very dramatic involving
helicopters
everything? So that must have been months in the planning.
It was it not, Chief?
Yeah, I think I started the first week I got sworn in March of last year. So it ended in December, so it took 9 months to bring 20 in. There's still a lot more drug dealers identified in town.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to keep the pressure on. They don't always have to be 9 month investigations. We just did search warrants 2 weekends ago. It's a much shorter investigation that netted a handgun and heroin. So we want to keep the pressure on, again, to make it less desirable to peddle here in the city.
A lot of people, I live in the second ward, and a lot of the buzz that I heard after those arrests were that those aren't dealers. Those are people who are just supporting their habit. They're just junkies. How many people do you think are dealing, you know, the people who get engaged with the system, do you think that are supporting their habit rather than, like, going into business?
I have no interest in arresting someone that's supporting their habit. Everyone that was arrested in December was a drug dealer.
Uh-huh.
And as evidenced by their convictions, I think that we've been proven right in that matter.
Right.
These are drug dealers that are profiting from peddling drugs to our people, and sometimes young kids.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we're going to focus our efforts. So now a person who simply got a drug issue, it's an addict, is not going to be the focus of especially our long-term investigations.
Mm-hmm. I know that there's been some pressure from some of the aldermen on the north side to for you to do a meeting in the second ward.
A meeting with Tiffany and Don Moore at 12:30 right after this.
Okay.
To schedule meetings within the community.
Right.
To address public concerns. So uh-huh. I'll do it not just the second and first,
right.
But all the wards.
I mean, I went to the one that you did in the first ward, and I thought it was spectacular. I thought people really had an opportunity to meet you and to give you their concerns, and I thought that it really was a much needed and a big change from the past. It seemed to really help and create a lot of goodwill in that ward.
But what I think we'll do is on our website, we'll post office hours. I think rather than do these large-scale meetings where folks are a little reluctant to speak up,
mm-hmm.
To have office hours posted, and this is what I'm going to meet with Tiffany about today, to have a 2 or 3 hour office hours, after hours, to just have people walk in and we can address their problems,
mm-hmm.
and we'll post that throughout the city.
It's also important to know that Sheriff Bartlett has dedicated a full-time deputy sheriff working with a Capital District Drug Enforcement Task Force based in Albany, and they're doing a lot of work outside of Hudson here in Columbia County with targeting larger level drug dealers as well. So it's not just in Hudson, it's throughout the county. And as we said, the New York State Police Community Narcotics Enforcement Team, and the New York State Police is also a member of the Capital District Drug Enforcement Task Force, as is the federal DEA and the FBI and a number of other local agencies. Mm-hmm. So we're so it's a very concentrated effort throughout the county. But as I say, none of us have any illusions at the fact that we're going to fix this problem overnight.
Right.
We may never fix the problem. And the answers that we have are in large part a result of the nature of addiction.
Mm-hmm. If there was one thing that could be done, say you had all the money in the world and you could do something to try to solve this problem, having seen it on the ground where you are, what would that be? You know, the problem is really difficult. Crickets. We're hearing crickets.
Do people take drugs because they have no prospects for their future? We've been through a rough economic time. Is it because they don't get it, have a job, they can't afford college, or is it something else?
Well, I'm no psychologist or sociologist. However, I think there is clearly a connection now between this epidemic of abuse of synthetic narcotics and heroin. And the reason goes back to the fact that for the longest period of time, as synthetic narcotics were created and prescribed, we were learning that if prescribed correctly and if prescribed purely for pain management, that they were not addictive.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that turned out to be simply untrue.
Right.
And the fact is, as persons who really needed these synthetic narcotics became addicted, and doctors ignorantly continued to prescribe, they turned, as we discussed earlier, to heroin because it was more and more expensive and more difficult to get the synthetic narcotics they need. Similarly, the persons, you know, it's not unusual, and the chief has a little box in front of the in the lobby of the police station. People get prescribed narcotics, these synthetic narcotics, and don't necessarily use them all.
Right.
They keep them in their medicine cabinet, and their children use them. Or the persons who break into their homes go straight to those medicine cabinets and steal them before they go to the jewelry box. So it goes back to that, and I'm hopeful that this new legislation with respect to requiring doctors to register the amount of these drugs and the fact that it's more difficult for persons to go to a series of doctors to get additional medications will help somewhat, but it doesn't help
if it drives them to heroin, though.
Well, that's exactly right.
That's exactly right. That's exactly
in the year two. Ironically, in the year 2000, the AMA chastised the doctors for under-prescribing pain. They're not handling pain, not prescribing pain. So now we have this huge explosion.
Right.
Yeah, and opiates and people, and now we've pulled back and restricted opiate prescription, now they're hooked. Mm-hmm. They go to the $10 heroin, which is less than marijuana or beer even,
right,
to get their high.
So before we end, I'm going to switch gears a little bit. No, I'm actually a lot. I was wondering what you think about the liberalization or legalization of marijuana or decriminalization of marijuana that sort of seems to be trending in the country. Do you think that that's a good thing?
Well, I believe it's not up to the district attorneys to make determinations as to what the law is. We're required to enforce them. However, I do not believe that the legalization of things that do harm benefits anyone. And clearly, drugs, as we've been discussing for the last hour, do harm.
Of course, alcohol and cigarettes are legal, though.
And we don't have... and that's the problem. It's a complicated question because they do harm. So do we want to add another drug in the mix that does harm? And there's more and more studies now that shows that this very potent marijuana does create harm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a good point the chief makes. The older of your listeners, Mr. Mendolian, may have used pot back when they were in high school and college back in the 60s. The drugs, the marijuana that is in sold now is nothing like that. Nothing at all like that. And I think the chief will agree that it's extremely much stronger. And,
do you think that
I don't know the answer. I don't believe that.
Do you think that law enforcement dollars should really be focused there? I mean, I can't imagine that you're really running around doing a whole lot of pot busts unless it's incidental to the other things that you're picking up. But
and do you take complaints about a marijuana dealer down the hall in somebody's apartment building less seriously than another kind of drug dealing?
The legislature in New York State decriminalized small amounts of marijuana possession many years ago. And in fact, small amounts of marijuana possession is the only offense in New York State that can result in a dismissal, an outright dismissal mm-hmm. over the DA's objection.
And how small is small?
Under 25 grams.
Under 25 grams.
But they left in place the criminalization if it's smoked in public or seen in public. So, and many people believe that to be discriminatory against people of color or young people as well.
Might marijuana be an entry level drug to
I don't believe there's any question about it.
I was at a meeting for Tenants' Rights Forum that was held in Hudson recently, and a couple of tenants spoke about how unhappy they are living down the hall from a marijuana dealer. And they said they couldn't get any help from, police.
I've been in contact with James McCarthy, Director of Security for HUD, oversees the Providence Hall and Schuyler Court. And that's a big issue we discussed. We're going to actually get some funding to put a couple of police officers down there in the housing. And what happens is they're going to actually address vigorously complaints of marijuana use, sale, and stuff in these controlled apartments. And they will move to evict people who are dealing, peddling out of these things, or habitually using it in the hallways and things like this. So that, so we're going to work together with them on those kind of quality of life complaints.
One last question for you. There's been some talk about doing a substation down at Bliss Tower or in that area. Is that
it's
on track?
Done. I have the keys for a small apartment at Schuyler Court. We'll get that out in the public. I went down there and checked it out last week. We're going to encourage and put orders out for the officers to do foot patrol, to check in there routinely, mm-hmm. interact with the folks down there. So I would expect within the next week or so, we'll get that information out there, but that's already a done deal.
Mm-hmm. I know there was talk of like having it kind of be a drop-in center where kids felt comfortable coming in and maybe giving you information. Is it formatted like that or not?
Well,
really?
I think if we sat in there and waited for information,
might
wait a long time. And a couple skeletons down there, but I think it's a way of interacting on a different level. Having good interaction with the residents down there, mm-hmm. And I think all good things will come from that.
Right. I think we're out of time, and you have to get to a meeting, but I wanted to say thank you to District Attorney Paul Chaika.
Thank you for having me.
Bob Gibson from the District Attorney's Office as well, and Hudson Chief of Police Ed Moore. We really appreciate you coming in. This is the second in a series on addiction and all of the problems that surround it. Today we heard from law enforcement, and we'll continue. In the past, we heard from Dan Almasi from the Department of Mental Health and Courtney Lavelle on the last show. And as we look at this issue, we want to try to peel away the onion and try to figure out how we could do things better in our area and for the people who live here. So we really appreciate you coming in and taking the time out of your days to do this. So thanks very much. This is At Issue on WGXE 90.7 FM.
And we're back here live in the studio. That was a recorded interview that we did with District Attorney Paul Chyka from Columbia County, his Assistant District Attorney Bob Gibson, and Chief of Police Ed Moore from the City of Hudson. We just wanted to clarify one thing in the interview. Chief Moore was speaking about Tiffany, and he was referencing Tiffany Garriga, who is the alderman from the second ward. And I just wanted to be certain that people understand who we were talking about, because there's a number of Tiffany's around. So, Deborah, your thoughts on the interview. What did you think about it? How did it go?
I'm surprised at how widespread this problem seems to be. And I was thinking, you know, they talk about 6 degrees of separation. I'll bet that every one of us has about 2 degrees of separation from a serious drug mm-hmm. problem in their family or close circle of friends,
right.
I know that public officials are concerned about this. You know, people who have commercial driver's license get tested regularly, although it's supposed to be random. And I've learned that some those people are warned the night before. Mm-hmm. I don't know if people are concerned about that or not, but there is federally required drug testing in place for people in both public and private employment mm-hmm. who operate heavy machinery, and that's a good thing.
All right. I thought it was remarkable. One of the things I thought was really striking in the interview was the candidness that all of these people, that all three people had with the failure of the drug war. Number one, I thought another piece was striking as well, and something that I've noticed for some time, but I thought that the admission that not having inpatient drug treatment in the area is a big problem toward helping people move toward treatment. That's big news. I mean, the thing is that when people are looking to get clean, whether on their own or by having had an unfortunate relationship with the police, they are really only at that point where they're ready to get clean for a very short time. And if they're not unable to gain access to inpatient treatment, which is what many of them need, that's a serious problem. I thought the other piece that I thought was really interesting.
And it's very expensive.
Right.
To get
and that's
clean.
That's the other piece that they made very clear that the lack of coverage by insurance companies is a huge problem in this thing. And I think that I hope that some of our elected officials on the state level will start looking at that and require insurance companies and Medicaid to provide funding for people for drug treatment and for detox, because it's sort of shocking that they're able to skirt paying those costs. I mean, for any insurance company to think that heroin addiction is not life threatening, I mean, it's just insane. That's I was really shocked at that part of the discussion.
Yeah, and what kind of society are we if we don't help people? It's a kind of an illness. If someone's in a car accident and needs stitches, they get them. No yeah. one would prevent that. It's no different. If they have a drug problem, they need to get well.
I thought certainly the openness and the willingness to come on here and speak with us, I thought was remarkable as well. The district attorney is Republican. We are identified as being involved in Democratic Party politics, and you're an elected official in the town of Taconic. So it was a good thing that that our district attorney, his assistant, and Chief Moore were all willing to come on and talk with us and to really start addressing these problems. The addiction and its impact on our community is such a complicated and multi-leveled thing that our plans to have this continuing conversation about addiction, I think, is the only way that we're going to start being able to look at the problem holistically and try to come up with better solutions. And I give great credit to our guests for coming on and being as frank as they were, in, so that we can have an honest conversation about these problems without some of the politics that get bog it down.
Well, admitting there's a problem is the first step toward solving it. And they must want the public to be aware. You know, we've got a whole new kind of quantum leap in the problem with the introduction of opiates into the mix. And if someone like Rush Limbaugh is suffering from an addiction to that, we all have to watch our backs.
We're talking a little bit about, we haven't formulated an exact guest list, but we've heard so far from people involved in treatment. We heard on our first episode on this issue from Dan Almasi, who is the dual recovery coordinator with the Department of Health here in Columbia County, and Courtney Lavelle, who's very active in the recovery community. This past the interview that we just finished was now with law enforcement, and I'm hoping that in the next phase we'll be talking to some people who are in the defense field, either public defender or a defense attorney that is often in the mix, and let us hear from their perspective, and perhaps even someone who's been convicted or been processed in the system. I think hearing from somebody on the other side of law enforcement, on the receiving end of it, let's say, I think that's our next goal for the next phase of this discussion. We're planning doing segments on addiction and on drugs about every third episode, because we there's so many other things that come up. We don't want to be unable to talk about other issues, but that's kind of our ongoing plan, and I think that's a good plan going forward. Any last thoughts on the interview before we close up?
I'm just glad that we did it and glad that all that information is out there.
We apologize for the level of the recording. We tried to adjust it a little bit here in the studio, but I realized that it was not our best. And for those who listened anyway, thanks for sticking with it. I think it was worth it. And we'll continue touching on this issue. Check out our Facebook page and please like it. It's facebook.com/@issue spelled out. And we post all the archives of the shows in case you missed something. We also tell you about our upcoming guests there, and it'll wind up making its way into your feed on your Facebook news feed. So do that, facebook.com/@issue. And we will be back in 2 weeks with the next episode of At Issue. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Thanks to Deborah Gilbert for joining me. And again, thanks to our guests.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
We will be back. This is At Issue. This has been At Issue on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acra, Catskill, Hudson.
Mark Ruffalo, and you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acra.
It's the Shomer Show. Wednesdays from noon to 2. WGXC.